It's time your hard-earned money works harder for you. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested cash earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. No account fees, no minimums, and free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts anytime. Join over a million people who trust Wealthfront to build wealth at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and is not a bank. APY on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY. With markets changing and living costs rising, finding a reliable place to grow your money matters now more than ever. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested money earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. There are no account fees or minimums. And you also get free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts 24/7. So you always have access to your money when you need it. And when you're ready to invest, you can transfer your cash to one of Wealthfront's expert-built portfolios in just minutes. More than 1 million people already use Wealthfront to save and build long-term wealth with confidence. Get started today at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront Brokerage is not a bank. Annual percentage yield on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. The cash account is not a bank account. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY.
We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again!
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
That's definitely. This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster suit.
And this week is...
Night Trap! They're right behind you, Night Trap!
10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God.
You got to get your voice all warmed up to talk into a microphone.
I feel like, do you ever see that old thing of the radio announcers when they do that shit?
No.
Well, they used to like have those like very like, hey, this is DJ X from WKCY. And they had to really practice that. So they would do those vocal warm ups before.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, you guys are really fucking crazy. Just talk in your normal voice. Honestly, it's more grating to me to hear someone trying really hard to talk like an asshole than it is for hearing like someone just talk normally. I'll take the mistakes in the fucking talking, you know?
There are some voices that are just so naturally like radio heavy voices that you're just like, you just sound like you belong in the radio just naturally. Like your voice just screams, I need to be on the radio. Like you're doing a radio voice just naturally and it's, I don't know how you're doing it.
But your voice screams, I need to be on the radio, but your personality screams, I have children in my basement.
That happens sometimes. It does.
A lot of the times.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Scott.
Yes. And I'm Steven.
And we are Soul of a Gamer podcast. Each week we play a game or every other week or something. We play a game and we tell you about the game, or we do a hot takes and we tell you about some of our most controversial things we don't like or like don't have an opinion
just
on.
Just the feelings that we have in general or don't have in general.
Just lack of or have. Extreme. Yes. Sport.
Extreme. But yes, and I'm trying to tie in what? Extreme what?
Where are you going?
I was segueing. Oh, okay.
No, segue. I was just saying, extreme sports. There we go.
Okay.
That's what you get.
Well, speaking of extreme sports, where you're talking about Mario Kart not too long ago, and I actually posted a TikTok video about that, and that video surprisingly got a decent amount of views, 1,700, which for us is decent. Shut up. I know it's small. But we were talking about how Mario...
I don't watch TikTok.
Mario Kart World is being a little too complicated, and we didn't like that the Mario Kart is basically seeming more like a skateboard than a kart racing game.
Is it Mario Kart World? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Oh my God. Just stop. Just call it
because
fucking
it's
nine.
Open world now, too.
I don't care if it's open world or not. Just call it fucking Mario Kart.
When you
nine.
Do Grand Prix, you have to race, and then you have to like travel on the open world to the next race and stuff like that now.
It's kind of like, so they're stealing Crash Bandicoot racing ideas.
things that were invented in the fucking 90s. Way to go, guys. You're doing Nintendo, you are awesome.
Yeah, and then they added the skateboard mechanics.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to point out a couple of things with that that I thought were kind of fun takeaways from it, or kind of fun things. So one of the first things that I had on here was that a few people said that it's funny how people who have never played a game can have such strong opinions. And as there are times where I agree with that statement for certain things, like if I said that the game was terrible, I would agree with you because I can't say it's terrible if I've never played it. But I didn't say the game was terrible. All I said was, I don't want to play this game because I feel like it's turning into a skateboarding game more than a car racing game.
Like, would you say it's funny how people who've never murdered someone think murder is bad? Like, what the fuck are you
seriously
talking about? Like, no, you can watch a video on something and say, that doesn't look fun to me.
Well,
now,
yeah,
your opinion might change when you play it. And in fact, it probably plays like every fucking Mario game because they all fucking do. So it's probably a little bit fun. So get the fuck over yourself, dude.
Well, and have you never watched a movie trailer where you're like, oh my God, they got that guy to play that in the new one? Fuck that. I don't even want to go watch that. You've never had that reaction to anything.
Have you ever said a movie was bad? Were you part of making that fucking movie? Go fuck yourself.
Were you ever look at the box at a frozen dinner aisle and like, that looks terrible, I should buy that and eat it till I can actually judge it? Or do you just like, no, I don't want that?
Yeah, like, that looks
you
like
can
it's
going to
give
judgments
me heartburn. Yeah.
You can make judgments, like, but I can't say the game is inherently terrible or plays badly. I can't say any of those things because
plays,
I haven't
like
played
I said,
the game.
Like every other fucking Mario
Kart. Yeah, it does.
Like, they all
and
play the same.
Honestly, there's one guy who really came and said a bunch of really nice things just saying like, hey, actually the Mario Kart like skateboarding is really honestly just more of a thing for the tryhards, and casual players don't do it well enough for it to actually enhance their gameplay.
Fucking tryhards.
So he actually, it was really cool. I think this guy's name was Brad Z Power, but yeah, he actually had a couple back and forth with me, just giving me more information about what changed with the game, things he likes, things he didn't like, things that changed. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a really good, interesting perspective. And you made me almost want to give it a try if or when I ever get a Switch 2, which at the time I'm not, because there's no games worth it.
Yeah, and honestly, it's just like I'm like liking Nintendo less and less every day.
I know it's hard because like I've been really like you, I know you've been anti-Nintendo for a long time, but I've been kind of still just like, no, I still like them. I don't necessarily agree. Like, I agree, but I don't like, I want to love them because I love so much of what they've done. But then at the same time, like everything I keep seeing on the news lately, I'm like,
yeah, they just suck. So
yeah.
I mean, whether they agree they suck or not doesn't matter, but I think they suck.
The other controversial take for the game, though, that I wanted to bring up that I thought was interesting was we had someone say that Mario Kart has never been a racing game. It's a strategy game with karts. And there was a decent argument back and forth with that.
Interesting. Okay, well, if they say so, from start to finish, seems like a racing game to me, but whatever.
I mean,
I'm just a guy who plays games.
I mean, there is strategy in the game. I'm not saying there's none, but and one of the users even pointed out in a lot of the older Mario games, it was really easy for you if you are good at a racing game to just get in first and stay in first, no matter how much. And blue shells were way more lax back in the day and they didn't appear as often. And you didn't have as many people on the track either. So you didn't have as many people getting access to blue shells. And so, like, it did feel more like racing games back in the day. And I was like, thank you. Like, I agree. Like, 100%. It did feel more like racing games. And more, the more they keep adding, the more strategy they add, the more in-depth they add, the more that it has a lot more to master. It used to be a game that anyone could pick up at any time and win a race. And now it's becoming, if you know all of these things, you can win a race.
Yeah.
And yes, on the casual level, you might still be able to win races, whatever. I understand that. But I'm saying the difficulty spike of the higher ceiling of the game keeps raising. And I liked how simple it was in an easy, approachable game for everyone.
Yeah, I miss Double Dash, man. That was the fun shit.
Dude, I never got to play Double Dash. I never had a fucking cube at the time.
That was the best one. All right, well, let's move on past this and jump right into... Honestly, I think we'll... No, I think we'll just skip the what are we playing this week since we jumped into the TikTok stuff.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and we'll just jump right into Lost and Random.
Yeah. Nice.
We hope you enjoyed our last week's game, or game, hot takes. That was the one Steven was talking about. I believe it was, what was it again? It was,
you're going to pull this up on me.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't look it up. It's fine.
Oh, okay.
But we hope you enjoyed it. So this week we are playing Lost in Random, I guess you could call it like a roguelike.
I wouldn't say roguelike at all, no.
Kind of.
No, because you don't go back to the beginning of the game.
Yeah, well, and the way they described it was like a very forgiving roguelike.
I would say an action adventure with roguelike combat, maybe.
Yeah. Because they were very specific on like, this is technically a roguelike, but
your combat is because it's kind of random and it's hard. Deck based, but I think that's literally like the only
if you lose the combat, you have to restart the combat altogether. So
yeah, exactly.
Very beginning. There is no like if you got through wave 6, you're still going back to wave 1. So
true.
So I think that's where they get their roguelike tendencies in this game. Just so you guys know. I agree. I don't think it's a traditional roguelike. Doesn't feel like a roguelike, but
their second game is a roguelike 100%, which is why I also am like, no.
yeah. So I think they learned a lesson from their first game and they kind of wanted a roguelike mentality for this.
That's fair. Their second one, they went heavy, like Hades roguelike, like I talked about.
All right. Well, here we go with the story of the making of Lost in Random. Zoink, who makes the game, had worked on several games before Lost in Random. Each of those earlier titles was quirky, inventive, and visually distinct, but the team felt ready for something bigger. With Lost in Random, they aimed to take everything they had learned, every gameplay idea, every visual experiment, and fuse it all into a single larger vision. This time, they weren't just making a game. They wanted to tell a story with darker, more emotional undertones than anything they'd done before. And I watched this whole, like, 2-hour thing with them explaining what this game is, and they kept dropping that this is a triple-A game. Now, I'm going to
single.
I was going to say double-A, probably. This is not a triple-A game. Not at all. No. I don't know why they kept saying that. They didn't have, like, the big funding that other
they didn't even have a physical AAA release. Games.
Yeah, so I guess I was a little confused when they kept like pointing this out, and even the other people in this interview kept pointing it out. And I'm like, you guys got to stop. This is not a AAA game.
No,
and I know
no,
that
it,
because
it didn't
AAA
have AAA
games,
budget.
Well, and like with AAA games, I can find like a million articles on it, and I found like 4 on this one. So I can tell you right now, it's not a AAA game. But
no,
it could be with a little tweaks, but for this one, it's just too short to be AAA, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. A major source of inspiration came from the Australian artist John Tan, whose moody and expressive artwork influenced the overall tone of the game. His work, full of eerie charm and subtle melancholy, helped the team shape a world that felt mysterious and shadowy. They also drew from the imaginative world of, God, I always mess up his first name, Hayao Miyazaki?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, particularly his strange creatures, beings that were both whimsical and otherworldly, yet completely natural in their settings.
Oh, yeah. Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. It's a Studio Ghibli guy.
Yes.
The true spark, however, came from a single image, a painting of a girl holding a die, seemingly trapped inside of a board game world. That single painting lit the creative fire that captured the exact feeling they wanted, a fantastical world ruled by chance, where fate was literally determined by a roll of the dice. And also, they never met in the 2-hour video I watched, they never mentioned who made this painting. I have to assume it was the John Tan guy.
Probably. I mean, it sounds like
they literally never fucking mentioned who drew this or who painted it or anything. Like, I was just kind of upset because I'm like, you guys want to give proper credit? Like, if John Tan did this, say his name again so I have more information, but not sure why you didn't. From the beginning, the developers knew they wanted Lost in Random to feel different, not just in tone, but in movement and style. To convey the sense of a handcrafted stop-motion world, the team sent clay motion films to their animators. These films helped them express the kind of motion and atmosphere they wanted the characters to have. Initially, they tried skipping every other animation frame, hoping it would give the game that jerky, charming claymation feel. But in the game engine, that made things look too laggy, too choppy. So they scrapped the idea, focusing instead on capturing the feel of claymation through the design, lighting, and animation style. And it was actually really cool. They were super into claymation. They were literally like,
that's cool.
They were showing like the movies that they were inspired by. They were showing like the Tim Burton movies.
Yeah.
that kind of were in similar claymation style. They like really love claymation.
Nightmare Before Christmas and Coraline.
Yeah, and even better is they wanted to make the entire animation from claymation, and they're like, that's really dumb. This is going to take us literally years just to get the claymation done.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was really funny, though, them talking about it.
I watched the behind the scenes of the Wallace and Gromit director, and he was even talking about just like one train scene that he did and how he had to do it and how many times they had to film it and how many days it took. And I was like, oh my God.
It takes claymation's hard, dude. It is insane. You have to have a whole team for that. You have to be shooting multiple things at once. Like, it is
insane.
Plus the sets
and stuff. It's in puppetry.
They're
crazy.
Giant.
Yeah.
They take up like literal like 2,000 square foot rooms just for like two scenes. Like, it's
fucking ridiculous.
Crazy. To make this world come to life, they built it using Unity Engine. It was the biggest team Zoink had ever assembled. 50 people compared to them. Like, it's just, again, AAA games. No AAA game is made with 50 fucking people, guys.
No.
Compared to the 20 or so they'd had on previous projects. They built it in the middle of a global pandemic. Despite the physical distance, the team maintained strong communication and adapted to remote work, pushing through the uncertainty to keep the development on track. Much of the game's visual identity was shaped by practical experimentation. Key characters were first modeled in clay, because of course they were, physical sculptures that were handed off to the animators as reference. And they had a really funny story on this. The director of the game invited like the entire art team to come out to a Christmas party. And when they got there, he's like, okay, so what we're going to do today for fun, we're going to make clay sculptures.
With markets changing and living costs rising, finding a reliable place to grow your money matters now more than ever. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested money earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. There are no account fees or minimums, and you also get free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts 24/7, so you always have access to your money when you need it. And when you're ready to invest, you can transfer your cash to one of Wealthfront's expert-built portfolios in just minutes. More than 1 million people already use Wealthfront to save and build long-term wealth with confidence. Get started today at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA SIPC. Wealthfront Brokerage is not a bank. Annual percentage yield on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. The cash account is not a bank account. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY.
Sculptures. And some of the sculptures they made that night made it into the game. The Shadow Man was made that night. Yeah, it was really
funny. Awesome.
And the guy
that's a cool
kept
way to do it, though.
Yeah, the guy kept all the clay sculptures. He never put it in an oven, so it was kind of moldy still. And he's it's kind of cool to have this on my desk. It's inspiration, because this is the Shadow Man, and I made him. So
that's so cool,
isn't it? Like, it's really sweet. Yeah. This process gave the characters a unique, grounded style and helped preserve the handcrafted stop motion feel they were aiming for. As for the creatures that inhabited this strange world, the developers took inspiration from Star Wars. Specifically, how Star Wars, and I never thought of this before, by the way, this is very interesting.
Okay.
How Star Wars worlds were filled with wildly different species without explanation. No one questions why there are dozens of alien types in a cantina. They just are. That's the same approach Zoink took. Towns in Lost and Random were filled with odd alien-like beings, and the team never felt they needed to justify their existence.
Perfect, honestly.
Yeah. And a lot of their inspiration for those guys came from old fairy tales, like original fairy tales. So
nice. No, I mean, that's really cool. Like, it's an
interesting
take. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense. And I never thought about that with Star Wars either, but they did get that vibe because I never questioned it either. If you don't ever give an explanation, no one questions it a lot of times.
Yep. Super interesting. The game's development was full of clever shortcuts and improvisation. I don't know why I can't say that word. At one point, a rat character was needed, but instead of building a new model, the team simply reskinned an existing character to look like a rat.
I mean,
And another one is they took that rat character, they made the bigger one, and in the beginning, you get to Two Town, there's a rat that runs by you, and the guy's like, you know, it's quick, and if you looked really closely, you'd see it's literally the same rat that's just walking around at normal size.
Oh, damn.
But, like, I just shrunk him down and took his clothes off, and that's the rat.
Oh, God.
It's just funny.
That is pretty good.
They did stuff like that for a lot of it, and it's like all these shortcuts.
Fair.
But not all, every challenge had an easy fix. One major obstacle came from the art style itself.
The heavily stylized environments weren't easy to render in large open levels. Early on, the team experimented with a system that divided the world into cubes. And this, I guess, is normal. So for like normal games, you divide each rendered area into a cube. And it, while you're in that cube, the area is rendered. As you leave that cube, the next area, gets rendered, and the previous area stops being rendered. And that way you save on like performance, and you don't have to worry about rendering everything at the same time.
Yes, which is why a lot of games, old games, and games have gotten better at hiding it and hiding it faster, but a lot of games made you do those like sections where you were like crawling on a wall because it was loading the next cube and switching over from that cube.
Yeah. The idea was that only the cube the player was standing in would be rendered, saving on performance, but that system proved too limiting. The transitions between cubes disrupted the flow and made the game feel small. Eventually, they landed on a better solution, sectional rendering. Each level was divided into sections. As long as the player stayed in one, that section would be fully active. Between sections, it created a narrow buffer zone where two sections would load at once, allowing seamless transitions without dropping detail or immersion.
Nice. That's a good way to go around that, actually.
Yeah. It's cool to hear about some of this stuff because we just take it for granted when we're playing games. You
100%.
Know?
Yeah.
we don't think about how hard it is. Like, they showed some fog in Three Town. You go there and you see this fog like over a battlefield, and they're like, you know what's funny is the fog out there is just literally us drawing, like it's us coloring in, so we don't have to show what isn't rendered, because if we show what isn't rendered, you're gonna see literally nothing.
Yeah,
like no, I love- they zoom out into the giant robot things in Three Town, and you see that they're literally standing on nothing. They're just floating in the air. Like, it is kind of funny. Like, that's why they need the fog, to avoid people noticing that stuff.
Anytime you go in, like, if you find like a god mode or like a creator like view, or you can like kind of break the map and like look behind everything that the levels have, it's always crazy to see like how nothing is back there and how only like inside this realm everything is. It's really cool though.
And you know what's interesting too? I never thought about this, but the guy, he had the unbroken version of the game. So essentially, he could go into any level he want and start in that level.
Oh, okay.
And when I was a kid, I used to play the Sonic games on the Sega Genesis, and you could do that same shit by doing a combination of things at the start screen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was like a development tool so they could work on separate levels. Or test separate levels, and they just never took it out of the final project. And I think that's really interesting now that I think about it, because you almost think like it's a cheat you found, but it's intentional so people can A, test, and B, work on the level.
Yeah, it's kind of like when we replayed Mario for our first like revamp video.
Yeah,
and we noticed that like if you completed a world, you could actually start back at that world instead of starting all the way over. And I'm like, wait, what? I never knew that growing up.
and that way they could test it again and again and again and again. Like, it makes sense. It really does. It's just interesting.
Yeah. That's crazy. Cool.
Where was I?
You were talking about blowing.
Much of the game's imagery was reused and reworked from other designs to keep a consistent visual language. This not only maintained aesthetic unity, it also helped the team work efficiently. When it finally released, Lost in Random was met with generally positive reviews. Players praised its world, its originality, and its commitment to unique vision. It was a strange, moody fairy tale, one shaped by clay, chance, and a little bit of chaos. A game where everything felt handcrafted down to the last roll of the die. And that's
there.
It.
Nice.
All right. Well, we're going to jump right into the best and the worst right now.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to say about this game is it is kind of fucked up that at 12 years old, you have to roll a die, and there's a 5 out of 6 chance that you're going to get taken from your home.
Yep. No matter what. That's what it is.
No matter what.
You know, and I really like the things I liked about this game. The storytelling's great. I think the visuals are fucking awesome. That you can tell they really cared about the visuals in this game. The gameplay is actually really fun. There's a lot of cool things on the map to find. There's some hidden treasures and such. The card playing and the fighting is really cool. The only problem I had with it is it's very limiting. You know, there's
a certain number of cards, certain number
of things.
Yeah,
there's only like, 35 cards in the whole game, I think.
Yeah, I think something like that. And then one of the things I've even heard and other people complain about too is like the game doesn't evolve. Like once you've like learned the mechanics of the game, that's it. You just repeat the process over and over again. Some of the combat does kind of feel repetitive and kind of does feel dull sometimes, especially towards the end. especially because you're just doing the same things over again. And some of these battles are long and lengthy, too.
Yeah. Well, and like without the option of very customizable decks, you lose a lot, you know? Like a lot of that repetitive nature can be supplanted by just having a sweet fucking deck, you know? Like when I used to play Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, one of the most fun parts of that game was making a deck, trying it out on just some random enemy that you fought a million times before and watching how you fucking dominate them. Like, and that's the love. And that game was, you know, made in 2000 and it has 20 times the amount of cards that this game has, or 30 times. It's just like, I think they really limited themselves with the amount of cards they put in the game. And if they were a true AAA game, this should have been like a 150 to 200 card thing,
with DLC card packs and all this stuff.
I wouldn't have done DLC card pack. I would have just like put a shit ton of cards in.
I would have done a DLC new game plus with a new 35 card pack, a whole different card pack. That way you could play the entire game, but fully fresh with a whole new system. Like, yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Then like that was the most limiting thing to me. It's like the deck's only 15 cards. You draw five at a time. So essentially by turn three, you're already done with your deck.
It, like it's,
you're done.
And some of these battles last around like 20 minutes. So
yeah,
it
some
takes
of them,
a while.
Some of them can. Honestly, I didn't struggle with any of the battles or anything. I just got a little bored.
No, they're easy.
And like a lot of the cards are really non-balanced. They said they really balanced the cards to make them all good. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, like some of the cards were just kind of useless. There's a card that essentially puts a line in between you and your dice. Yeah. And anyone within that line gets hurt.
Yeah.
But like the damage is very low. You could like throw down, like I threw down a time sphere. Mm-hmm. So the time was slowed for these guys. They're all on the ground and I'm still not hitting them with this because it's not high enough off the ground.
Weird.
Like they're very blocky enemies and their blocks start a little bit higher than where their legs go, which is kind of annoying when you're trying to play the game.
Yeah.
So I really wish they would have focused more on the combat aspect and not just on the dark undertones, because the combat really is unique. I think the combat's really cool. I just think they needed to add more cards and more
100%.
Like, options and more variety of enemies, because honestly, the enemies never change. You basically, by Two Town, you have faced every enemy outside of a boss that you have to face.
Yep. Essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I full-heartedly agree. I think that is, it's some of the best and the worst, because like we said, the combat is so unique and fresh and it is really fun, but it is just too repetitive because of how limited it is.
Yeah. And like, again, everything else is great. The story is actually really cool. The graphics are amazing. Like jumping through the background story is really cool. Just this fucking thing egging you on is the fact that the cards aren't that unique and the fact that they don't. So they do this thing in the game, which I also did not like, where they give you cards, right? You complete a quest and you get a card for completing the quest. But these cards are not unique to the quest. You don't have to do the quest and you can still get that card by just opening up a card pack.
True.
I mean, I think that's it just makes it feel like, what's the point in doing a side quest if you're just going to get a reward that you can easily get by buying shit?
Or more, I mean, but the storytelling and stuff is kind of the best parts of this game as well. I would say that's where most of the game lies, and like the storytelling is so rich and like poetic, and like the narrator gives such an awesome like fairy tale fable vibe to it all too. So I mean, I think I agree that I think they did the combat in the roguelike better, and I think the like especially dice powers are a lot better in the new one. Like I honestly played with dicey so much more in the new one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing that they just did a much better job at, like, they learned their lessons from this one. They saw what they did right, they saw what they did wrong, and they moved on. That's one of the next games I'm going to play, actually, is the sequel. It is a sequel, technically.
Yes.
It is not Lost in Random 2, per se.
It's Lost in Random...
I can't remember what it's called, but it's not the, it is the second game in the series, but it doesn't follow the same protagonist. So
no, it's
it is not necessarily a sequel to even story, but
it kind of is, because it is after the game.
It is, but it doesn't follow even
the Eternal Die. No, it doesn't. It follows the antagonist of the first.
So
game.
Like when you think of a classic sequel to a game, normally it would follow the same character, so you get more of that story, whatever.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Miles Morales game.
Yeah,
It's a spin-off
Spider-Man
game.
2. It's
a spin-off game of a character that you're playing them as. You're not playing a sequel of even, so I agree. Yeah,
and like I said, I think this game has a lot of cool things in it. I just really wish that they put more fucking cards. That's the only thing I wanted throughout the game is more customizable deck.
Yeah.
Again, guys, like, if you play Chain of Memories and can compare these two games, which they do play similarly, they play the same, almost the same. But the difference is Chain of Memories has a better deck building experience and more fun, honestly, because it's more of an RPG. So
fair. But yes, the only other thing that I was going to say was some of the levels are a little confusing to navigate and there's no map for guidance. Yeah. So that would be a little helpful too.
So here's the other thing. There is a fucking map. It's just the worst map of all.
Yeah.
So it highlights where you are in the section. Again, this is that sectioning thing they do. You're in that section and you cannot see exactly where in that section you are. You just know that you are in that section.
Yeah.
And it was just the dumbest map you could possibly put in that game. And it's not like these are hard to traverse areas. It would just be nice to have a map that's easier to read.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and get into the first few hours experience of the game. What do you think about this?
This game starts slow.
I agree.
I think one mistake they made is they took at least an hour, I think, just to get the dice.
I think so. Yeah.
So you start the game out with the dice to do like a little tutorial and a little background story to why you're in the current predicament you're in. But after that, it takes an hour more to get your own dice as the new character. And so you're not doing any combat for an hour, but you're walking around and kind of experiencing the world.
Yeah.
But I would say besides the puzzles, there's not a lot to do. So it almost fails the 2-hour test, but I think it passes just based on some of the puzzles they do introduce in this.
I was going to say, just because of the story and the art style, I was intrigued from the get-go right away. I was invested in the world and I wanted to know more. And it seems like a very interesting, complex in the way everything works with the six different villages that you have to roll a dice for. There's a lot that's very intriguing about it, but it is really slow. And I even was replaying it again recently and was like, I forgot how slow this beginning is. God.
It does pick up a bunch in the second area,
though. Yes, it
does. You have a lot more fun by the second area. It's just hard to get there because they do that stupid thing. Steve and I complain about this a lot. Forced walking.
Yes.
I hate it when games force you to walk to it.
It's time your hard-earned money works harder for you. With the Wealthfront Cash Account, your uninvested cash earns a 3.75% APY, which is higher than the average savings rate. No account fees, no minimums, and free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts anytime. Join over a million people who trust Wealthfront to build wealth at Wealthfront.com. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and is not a bank. APY on deposits as of September 26, 2025 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds are swept to program banks where they earn the variable APY.
Admire the view. I'm already admiring everything in a game when I'm playing.
Oh,
if you're
seriously.
Not, then it's not for you to admire. That's fine.
Yeah.
Don't force people to fucking do it.
Exactly, because that's why a lot of games, I feel like, even have photo modes. It's for the people who want to pause the game and gander at how beautiful the fucking game is.
Yeah.
And I hate when games are like, no, walk through this pathway for 30 minutes, you fucking enjoy this shit.
And also appreciate this 2.5-hour cutscene we're about to have after walking 30 minutes, asshole.
I've been hearing about the length of cutscenes in Death Stranded and Death Stranded 2, one of them being 45 minutes. I think one was over an hour.
Oh, my God.
Why are there cutscenes that are if I want to play a game for half an hour, I can't just play a game for half an hour because I might get interrupted by an hour-long cutscene. I get it. It could be beautiful. It could be masterful. The game could be the most incredible thing ever, but it also is very much taking you out of the game. You're not gaming for a full hour.
Well, now people are doing the they're cutscenes that exist while you can do things, right? And they're doing that a lot more in a lot more games. Halo got pretty funny for it because they would have a cutscene happen and you can still move around while you're in the cutscene and they just kill the person who the cutscene is going.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny when you do it, but
yeah.
But Halo, the original Halos, they had cutscene, they were short. But then they also had interactive moments where you could listen to people talk and still move around and have fun.
Well, and don't get me wrong, because we're going to be talking about cutscenes in our next video even. But cutscenes, like, they are hit and miss. Or not our next video, but our a few videos away, I think.
Yeah.
They're hit and miss, like, one of the best and worst parts of games sometimes. And
for
like,
sure,
I know 100%. They can be so incredible, but also sometimes they're so just like, I just want to play.
But yeah, I think this is definitely a pass for me. Just
I do like, too.
I think the story drives it. And again, there's some cool puzzles in the first area that kind of keep you interested. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't have those puzzles, this would be a fail, I think.
Fair. That's fair. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and get to our next segment then. Steve achieves.
What does he achieve? Fucking nothing.
As usual.
I think I actually got all the achievements on this game outside of getting all the... I fucked up. I missed one. I was pissed off on this playthrough,
too. I did not, but
too.
I think a couple of mine bugged, and it's bugged for a bunch of other people, too. So a couple...
Oh, is it? I've gotten every achievement minus get all the... Whatchamacallit, the journal entries.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And
yeah,
I'm a dummy because I missed the first one in the first world.
Oh,
and I was like,
that's always
fuck
such a bummer.
And that was my first playthrough. And in this one, I missed one in Two Town because,
oh
shit. Sorry. I want to bring up one more worst.
Okay.
This is what really drove me crazy about this game. There is no backward. Yeah. You cannot go back. And that's not just like in between big levels, like Two Town and Three Town or Tuberg and Three. I can't remember the names. Like Fourberg.
Three Town,
Two Town, Fourberg, Fivetopolis,
and then
Sixtopia, and
One
something. I don't remember. Maybe it's Oneberg. I don't. Who knows? Anyway, in the second area, like literally, they have two areas in the second area, and once you go past the second of the two areas, you cannot go back to it. So anything you missed in that area, you're fucked. And I think that was the stupidest thing they could have done.
Yeah, you can't even go back at all, like, later after the game or anything either. It's really annoying.
Yeah, it's really annoying because, again, if you just want to, like, get all the achievements, well, now you have to play the whole game again, which would be fine. But, again, the game can be a little lengthy, especially with the fights, and it gets a little boring fight all the time.
Yeah, so I definitely agree because, I mean, I missed the, which one I'm going to be talking about, the knock-knock achievement for going home and knocking. I wanted to bring this one up because it's so easily missable at the beginning of the game when you were...
Yeah, but what's nice about this one, I missed this one too when I first played, and I just went back and I played 2 minutes
and
I knocked.
Yeah, it's right at the beginning, so it's not too bad, but it is one of those ones that's easily missable. I have had this happen in so many games where I missed something right at the beginning because I didn't look at the achievement list before wanting to play because I want to play with some element of surprise.
That's
you almost have to sometimes.
Yeah, and with these games where you can't go back, especially.
Yes, so that is definitely annoying. I did want to say the game is about 9 hours long and about 15 to 20 hours to 100% complete. And it really just depends on if you play with a guide your first playthrough, I think you can get all the achievements, but... If you're going to have to play it twice.
You honestly do not need to play with a guide. This game is very
intuitive.
You probably
don't. No, if you just go everywhere, you don't need a guide. And it's really not hard to go everywhere. Another achievement in this game is On Guard. Go unscathed for 5 minutes in battle. This one is probably, from everything I've seen online, the easiest way to do this is just at the beginning when you're playing as the queen. Just run around in circles. Never get hit for 5 minutes and then you can get this.
So I did most of my achievements at the end of the game.
That's fair
too. And it wasn't too bad. I just filled my stuff with like defensive. So it includes
That's fair too.
It includes using the shields and shit. If you get hit with the shields, it doesn't count as getting hit.
True. That's fair. Yeah, I mean it's pretty easy, honestly. The AI is really easy to
dodge.
It's really not a good AI system. You will outsmart it no matter what. Like I think even a first grader is gonna outsmart this AI system. But yeah, another achievement is the resourceful achievement for completing a battle without using any weapon cards. So just using only your slingshot, I think.
No, you have to... How did I do this? This one was harder to do. I think the bombs don't count as weapons. I think they count as hazards.
Oh, okay.
So I think you have to use bombs, which is fine because it's really easy to use bombs.
The bombs are
hazards
because you have
bombs.
To shoot them with your slingshot to activate them. Yes.
Yep. Or you can just walk up and touch them too.
Oh, that's true.
Either way, but you don't want to do that. You'll die.
Yeah. So shoot him with a slingshot.
But I think they're hazard cards, and that's why that works.
I think you're right. I think you are right on that. So yeah, because I think those were classified differently, weapons and hazards. So
yeah.
And another achievement is all-in achievement for playing 8 cards in the same round. I don't think I got this one on my first playthrough.
So this one is actually not too hard to do. You just essentially you'll draw 5, mm-hmm. right? And individually you fill up your marker.
Yeah.
And you have 3 pins, so you can save cards. So if you draw 5 and you get 3 of the extra whatever.
Yes. Okay.
You play all of those, so you have for the next one, you save all those, play your first 2.
Okay.
Draw more cards and play more. Like, I'm pretty sure that's how I did it. I can't remember. I did that again. This was my first playthrough years ago, so.
And then one that seems to be bugged for a lot of people, so I wanted to give a warning for this one, is the closure achievement. This is for defeating the Shadow Man once and for all. Once you, I think you have to find him a couple times, and on the 3rd time you find him in a jail cell in the Sixtopia world.
Yep.
And you talk to him, and he lets you know, like, the Queen hired him to kill the King of Threedom to cause the battle for all eternity, because all 3
this,
kids will be battling.
This is the one where your dialogue option, you have to pick the right one to defeat him once and for all.
Yes. So this one, you have to be very particular on what you say, or you will not get this achievement. And I didn't get this achievement because I said something wrong. So this is one to watch out for. And
this
I
is one of those.
This one's also a bug achievement.
So you just tell him to fuck himself.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I ain't scared of you, you a little pity-ass bitch.
Yeah, that's exactly what it says, actually. It's crazy.
I know. You actually tell him he's just pity. I meant it. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the hunt for all the eggs.
I was questioning whether there... I know there's a lot of eggs in this, and one of the ones I want to bring up before you start, because I'm sure it's not on your list, because this was in the 2-hour video. So the cannons in Threedom.
Okay.
They're actually made of pots. So originally when they were making the cannons, you can tell that if you turn them like lengthwise,
okay,
they are all pots. They're all flower pots.
They just got like long flower pots as the cannons?
Yeah, then they reskin them a tiny bit to make them look like cannons. It was actually kind of funny. They're like, we didn't have any cannons to start, so I had some flower pots, so I put those down as cannons.
It's
pretty
funny.
Right. I just figured that wasn't on your list because that's kind of out there, and I just saw it in the video.
But that's a really good cannon Easter egg.
Yeah.
Okay, that was really bad.
That was really bad.
So kind of what you were saying, there is literally no traditional blatant Easter eggs in this. There's nothing that says like, hey, this is from this franchise. A lot of people point out that a lot of things were Tim Burton-esque and like Coraline-esque, which yes, there is that. Even's toy is a rabbit, and a lot of people said it's a nod to Alice in Wonderland, and
that's another, you know, during the video
they
talked about that nonstop. They're like, and not Alice in Wonderland, specifically the game Alice.
Yes, Alice, Madness Returns. Like those games, the American McGee Alice, yes.
Yeah, yes.
Because he had Alice and then Alice Madness Returns, I think was
which we played originally, which was fucking phenomenal.
Dude, it's so good. That's an underrated title for sure.
For sure. The art in that is just amazing too.
Oh, that one's incredible. And that one's like way darker too and way creepier, like way more adult. Like that one,
for sure.
The combat in that is way better too.
Yeah.
But yeah, the another one is there's a secret room in Sixtopia. There's a hidden room where there's concept art models and an homage to the developers, kind of a mini museum for most for the most thorough of explorers for the game.
Okay.
I didn't find that, but that's really cool.
That in the castle behind the throne?
I think so. There's a narrator commentary. If you go idle for too long or walk back and forth a lot, the narrator will start making snarky and funny comments about your gameplay style. I think that's just a little fun, little like Easter egg little moment thing that
they're doing a lot more now where they kind of make fun of people who go idle.
Oh, dude, I love that stuff so much, though. Like, my God. Speaking of Death Stranding, I saw the most wild idol animation video I've ever seen in my entire life, and it made me question everything about life.
Okay.
So, Norman Reedus is a character. He just sits down on the ground in, like, the middle of this desert. And then all of a sudden, like, this, like, suitcase or, like, coffin thing, like, opens up behind him. And this guy crawls out of it, and he like looks at the camera, and he's like, and then he walks up behind Norman Reedus' character, like taps him on the shoulder. Norman Reedus stands up and he says something like, I have to do this or something. And then all of a sudden, a giant tentacle tongue comes out of his mouth and a giant tentacle tongue comes out of Norman Reedus' mouth. And they lock tongues, wrap around each other. Then they start like wrapping themselves in a giant tentacle, like cocoon.
So
and I'm like,
stupid.
What the fuck is happening? And then Norman Reedus' character wakes up like it was a dream. And he's like, oh. I was like, what?
You know what it is? It's the TikTok influence now, or the phone influence in general, where like you'll be playing a game, you'll be like, okay, I better look this up really fast. And then you'll be stuck on your phone for 30 and a half minutes because you're like, I also want to check this. Well, I also want to do this. Well, I also want to watch this little video that I just got. Well, I also want, you know, I think that's why they're doing all these fun, like,
oh yeah,
standstill animations, just because it makes sense. People are definitely like that.
Yeah. One of the other things I wanted to bring up in this was that Dicey in the game speaks gibberish. It's not really a language, but it is kind of a made up language that the devs actually kind of revealed. They actually use consonant phonetics, so fans have actually partially translated some of the phrases. I haven't found any of those translations. I was kind of looking for it a little bit because I was kind of curious. I don't know what any of it says, if it actually does say something. But apparently there are fans that have been working on trying to translate this Dicey gibberish, which is kind of hilarious. So
I wonder, I'm pretty sure this is a Swedish company, Zoink, if I remember right. It's Swedish Norwegian.
Okay.
So I wonder if a lot of their phonetics come from that language rather than English.
Maybe. That could be also. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got for those. So let's go ahead and get into our final values of what it's worth.
There was one more that you didn't mention that I'm upset at you for.
Oh, shit. Uh-oh.
In Threedom, you can all... It's just so funny. They're just so dumb. If you look in the distance, you can see a clothesline with clothes on it. And one of the pants is just a three-legged pair of pants. It's just dumb. Like, okay. And they would do that. they'd put that random shit in the game. Like, one of the things you can see is a cannon, like off to the side. And if you look to the left of the cannon, you can see there's a cannonball like stuck in the door where the cannon was firing.
It's just, damn.
Like
all
stuff
right.
like that. They did a lot of fun things like that where they're not super noticeable, but it's still fun to see them.
Well, then don't get mad at me for missing them, motherfucker.
I know it wasn't mad. It's just, that's right. I would have never noticed them. The only reason I know is because I watched that 2.5 hour long video of them
fair.
Talking about it.
That is funny, though, because,
that
I
was
did
more
not
fun for them
those.
Than it is for anyone else to find it. So.
And for you to fuck with me on.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, too. I mean, that's what you do. That's what we are.
All right. Let's get into the reviews. This game, again, this is a hard one. I really want to give it a 4. Because I think it deserves a 4, but the limited action and the limited attack cards and the limited like fun with battling kind of makes me go 3. So I think I am going to say 3.
I think I'm right there with you because like I would say 4 because of the art style and
it's beautiful.
The story. Like that part of it is amazing. And then I would say definitely like more 3 for the gameplay mechanics. Like they're fun and inventive, but they are limited and very dull after a while and repetitive. So,
you add more cards, and this game is an easy 4 for me.
I mean, fair, honestly. I think that would change it up quite a bit. And I do think that the combat in the roguelike is more fun. It's a lot more fast paced, and it's a lot more, and I wouldn't say a lot more unforgiving. Like I said, it's still a really relatively easy roguelike compared to other roguelikes, but it definitely has a like meatier feel to it. And some of the attacks and spells and stuff you have are really cool. The amount of because you actually like craft your abilities and you can craft like you keep adding all these different modifiers to all your dice abilities. So I like at some point I got it. So every time I threw my dice out, it was creating this poison cloud around him, but it was also shooting bombs around him nonstop, like mortars.
Nice.
And then he also I could whistle him to come back so I could throw him again. And I could just and that had a certain cooldown on it. And you could do all these different things, but you also get 4 different weapons that you just have at all times. You don't have to use a card for them.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade those weapons, and each weapon has 4 different upgrade trees of different styles of movements or types of abilities like acid or lightning or whatever. So it's very unique. Like it's definitely like focused more on the combat in the sequel or spinoff. I should say spinoff.
Yeah. Nice. I'm glad they learned their lesson then in it. I think this is game for both of us. Hard 3. Great story, great animation, just not amazing combat.
Yes, agreed. So, yeah. Bless you. Bless you.
Sorry, I had to sneeze, guys. All right. Well, that's it.
Yes. And then
Steven doesn't
get
to say any more. No more. He gets to shut the hell up.
I was just going to say next week we are actually talking about.
What are you going to say?
Next week, we are actually going over cutscenes and upcoming games.
Sweet.
So those are our hot take topics next week.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes. No.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'll shut the fuck
All right,
up
guys.
Now.
We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye. Love you. No.